Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I'm live in the studio with Sarah and Fernanda. They are both community organizers at Planned Parenthood of Greater Washington and North Idaho. I finally got it right. Hi, welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And I guess we could just kick off by doing some introductions, just one at a time, who you are, what your role is at Planned Parenthood, and how you got involved doing that work. Doing advocacy work there?
Cool. Yeah, Fernanda, do you want to start?
Sure. So this is Fernanda. I am the Raiz organizer of Planned Parenthood here in Spokane. Raiz is a Spanish word for root, and it's a program that got implemented in 2014. We started the program here in Spokane May of last year. And basically, you know, the whole goal of the program is to really outreach and communicate and build a strong relationship within the Latinx community. So a lot of my work is to be out in the community and do a lot of Spanish events. I was a volunteer for Planned Parenthood before I came on board as an employee, helping out with the Women's March. And so, yeah, it's been a great time for this whole year.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm Sarah, as Taylor said. I'm the public affairs community organizer for our local Planned Parenthood here. So I'm in charge of like the Spokane area and also North Idaho. And I got involved with this work mostly after the 2016 election. I think like a lot of people, I heard about all the stuff that people were saying about Planned Parenthood and about pro-choice people. And I realized there was a lot of misinformation happening. And at the time I was in college. So I, and along with a group of other fellow students, wanted to create a club on campus that would partner with Planned Parenthood and educate students. So that program is known as Generation Action. But we thought it was just going to be a simple process, but it took 2 years to have the club chartered because the administration was very conservative and didn't think that we should be on campus.
Was that a local university? You don't have to call them out. Okay.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all up to you.
Mm-hmm. So after just like leveraging and talking to people, doing petitions, getting alumni involved and all that kind of stuff, we were able to get chartered. So during that, I learned a lot about like local stuff in Spokane and just realizing how much goes into all this work. And I got really passionate about it. So after I graduated, I started working for Planned Parenthood as a community organizer. And now I work with those students that now took up the mantle after I graduated, which is really cool. So I manage 4 different Generation Action teams, do coalition work with people in the community, do political work when campaign season is around. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And I realized I should back up. Obviously, it might be obvious to people listening why I have organizers from Planned Parenthood on this week. But and hearing you both say that you got involved in pro-choice work around the time of the 2016 election, I think a lot of people, especially in our generation, have kind of taken like Roe v. Wade for granted and have kind of been coasting on, you know, people being in power who are not directly threatening that in such an aggressive way. But these last couple weeks with the bans that have gone through with the abortion bans that have gone through the heartbeat bills in Alabama and Georgia, and Ohio, I've seen a lot of people in my community, especially folks who are not as involved in politics, really panicking and really feeling like, oh no, we need to do something. So, that's why we're talking about this now. Have you seen that locally in Planned Parenthood? I mean, are a lot of people reaching out right now to the organization?
Yeah, definitely. Our volunteer manager actually just posted on one of our social sites that we have within the organization that we had 15 to 25 new people reach out, just angry and wanting to do something.
So what can people do? I mean, we can get way more into the specifics of the bills, but maybe people who are listening who are just upset or scared or angry right now, what can they do?
Yeah, we have a rally happening tomorrow, and Fernanda can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have a rally that's going to happen tomorrow. It's called Stop the Bans, #StopTheBans. So we have partnered up with Narrow Pro-Choice, and Indivisible Spokane, as well as the Women's March. And it's going to be tomorrow from 5 to 6 at the gathering, at the tribal gathering place right outside City Hall. And we are going to be having some speakers. And, you know, we want all of us to just gather around, be there, supportive. And we're going to have also a call to action, like, what can you do? There's a lot of things that we can do as a community. This is when it's so important that we gather stories, that we gather supporter cards, that we have all the information. And we use this information a lot when we go in and lobby for bills that can protect us. I don't know if, Sarah, you want to talk a little bit more about how, you know, Planned Parenthood advocates do the lobbying, and why it's so important to have these stories and have supporter cards.
Yeah. So we've seen that when you just rattle off statistics to people, it kind of just goes over their heads if they don't really care about an issue. It's all just numbers to people. So using people's personal stories is really important. And so that's something we've used with our lobbying. We'll take people over to Olympia and just have them share why they're passionate about the bills we're fighting for. My first experience lobbying was actually at a teen lobby day. So we took a bunch of teens from the Washington area, and we went and lobbied, and it was really cool seeing these teenagers just advocating for things like sex ed and being like, this is about me. Like, you might be sitting here in your dome building, but what you're doing impacts my life. And if I'm reflected in the curriculum you're passing. So that's been really important. So last year, we were able to pass the Reproductive Parity Act. So that one required that all insurance plans which cover maternity care to also cover abortions. So that's the stuff we can do when we have people's stories and we're encouraging them to fight and tell their legislators, like, this is important to me. And we just passed within this legislative session the Reproductive Health Access for All Act, which would require student health plans to also cover reproductive health care, which is really exciting. It prohibits gender identity discrimination, and making sure that that is more streamlined for folks. And then also we secured some funding in the budget for Take Charge. So making sure folks who are undocumented have access to reproductive health care. So it's really cool when we get stories and we get people out there and the things that you can accomplish.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I think a lot of people don't realize. I didn't even realize as a long time supporter, like financially and verbally, that Planned Parenthood is really on the whole spectrum from, like, let's do comprehensive sex ed so that, you know, mm-hmm. not as many people even need to access abortion, but let's also provide safe abortion. And then also that other side of doing work around immigration. Planned Parenthood's been one of the most visible organizations locally fighting for rights of undocumented people and immigration reform. So how does that all fit in? Like,
yeah, and for sure.
So, you know, one thing that I just think it's so important that the work that we do, in the sense that sex education and access to birth control, I mean, that's the essence of, you know, having a healthy life. So we have seen a huge decline in abortion rate from 2005 to 2010. I think there was about 26% decline in abortion rate because there was a lot of programs out there funded for sex education, for access to birth control. So all of that is in jeopardy now with this current administration. And we, you know, with the program at Raiz, we also do a lot of immigration advocacy. We know that Latinas have the highest rate of cervical cancer as well as STIs. And, you know, there's a lot of things that the barriers that they face. Not only is it, you know, access to the healthcare, transportation, but also insurance, as well as the language barrier and the culture. So, you know, this summer we are actually going to be expanding more to migrant camps, and we're going to be doing as well as migrant mobile health camps, and just trying to reach out the immigrant community that are here on migrant camps.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And what are some of those barriers? Just when you talk about culturally, and what's the approach of organizing to say, to kind of destigmatize some of these services?
So, you know, we hold, through the Raiz program, we hold some, we call them pláticas, which are just sex talks, you know, and usually the age range that I get, you know, ladies to come to these pláticas are about, I don't, mid-30s to mid-50s. And their biggest concern when we asked them, why we have the highest, why they think we have the highest rate of cervical cancer, why we're not going to go and get ourselves checked, the main reason was because their husbands were not comfortable with them having a doctor see them or a doctor. So, that's a big culture thing. We don't talk about sex very much in our culture. We don't even talk about periods in our culture. It's a very taboo subject. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done within the Latinx community. But so we're starting kind of slowly there.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think, there's work everywhere. I think it's good that it's been specifically identified and they're doing, such a good job with outreach. But, in like mainstream white Spokane, Washington culture, there's also a lot of, be sexy, but don't ever have sex. Mm-hmm. And be very pure, but don't ever talk about sex. And, so, yeah, we've all gotta work on that. So I guess let's get into, you talked about lobbying and some of the specific bills, but something I'm really curious about and frustrated with these current bans in Alabama and Georgia is people kind of chalking it up to like, oh, the South is backwards, which is, not accurate, pretty insulting, and also puts aside the fact that there's people in Washington state who want to do this. There's people in every state who want to do this. So can you talk a little bit maybe about the dynamic in Washington and in Idaho,
since
we reach both and y'all serve both?
Yeah. I mean, like, even just this year, a group of radical legislators, including Matt Shea, introduced a bill that aimed to abolish abortion within Washington state. So we're not like immune to all of this. Like, this happens probably in every state. So it's just recognizing that it requires a fight, right? It requires that we elect legislators who are supportive of us. And that bill that they were fighting for, it would have made fetuses receive the same rights and privileges as any human person beginning at fertilization, and make anyone who received an abortion accountable for manslaughter in the first degree, which is a class A felony. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I think, short-sighted to think that we are immune to the issues that are facing so many people. I think that's why it's important that we are doing the action tomorrow and the rally to remind people that this is an issue no matter where you live, especially if we're supposed to be caring about our neighbor and making sure that this doesn't happen here either. In Idaho, it's like that as well. Thankfully, they didn't pass any new abortion bills this year, but that doesn't mean that they... So even though abortion is legal there and they haven't passed anything too restrictive, it's still more restrictive than it is in Washington state. So they have... Like, women must receive state-directed counseling that includes information that definitely discourages from them choosing abortion. And it definitely it requires just a lot more from that person wanting to receive an abortion. And they have to wait 24 hours before going in for that procedure. Parents of a minor have to consent before they get an abortion. So just, like, things like that. So it's not always, like, those big laws that we're talking about. There's other types that definitely chip away at people's rights.
And even access, I mean, where are the health centers in Idaho geographically?
So our affiliate doesn't have any in North Idaho, just because we have one. I think the closest one that is accessible from North Idaho is our Spokane Valley location. And the other ones are from another affiliate of Planned Parenthood, and I think there's one in Boise, Twin Falls, and Meridian, so down in the Panhandle, or I guess the opposite.
Past the Panhandle. Yeah.
That's a
drive.
Right.
I mean, that's from Coeur d'Alene, Boise's an eight-hour drive.
Yeah, so definitely just realizing that if you can't access the rights that you're given, like, what good is it anyway? So just making sure that people have access through legislation and through all these systems to make sure people can access their rights.
Mm-hmm. And can we talk for a minute about the situation with crisis pregnancy centers? And can sure. we? I just always want everyone on the earth to know about that, because I feel like not enough people know, especially young people who might be targeted by those places.
Yeah. So crisis pregnancy centers are basically fake clinics, right? They're not regulated in any sort of way of some, you know, official medical facility. They encourage people who come in to continue with their pregnancies, no matter what the situation is. So the first thing they'll try to do is get you to take pregnancy tests, do an ultrasound. They don't really have ultrasound technicians. It's just a volunteer in a lab coat. So it's just really dangerous and a really shaming way to trick women into receiving care from them when it's not holistic care or even medical care.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also important for people to know that they discourage women as well. They discourage women from accessing birth control after they have a child, or if they're wanting to have an abortion. But they strongly discourage women, to have access or to be on birth control. So they're withholding access to birth control as well as sex education. But they definitely shame women for seeking abortions.
I've also heard just straight up giving false information, saying condoms are not effective, saying things like that. So it's very dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the local ones in Spokane parks a mobile clinic across the street from us. So we've had patients confused and going to them and then realizing they're in the wrong place and then coming to us. So it's just a lot of lying to patients and just like not allowing them to come to where they need to go.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of goes back to a cultural issue of, if you're trying to access healthcare, if you're trying to go to the clinic on Indiana, you know, and there's other information parked outside, and then there's also people yelling at you and mm-hmm. trying to pray for you, which has that ramped up? I mean, has the presence of, since like say the 2016 election, has the presence of protesters ramped up?
Yeah, definitely. We have protesters out every single day. Something new that has happened in the past like 6 months is that a radical group of anti-choice people have started a church out front of our clinic. So once a month they will hold a church service outside, and it'll attract a few hundred people. So yeah, definitely an increase in protesters. And yeah, it's a lot.
I would like to say also, I have seen an increase in protesters, but I've also seen a huge wave in supporters mm-hmm. coming in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this is just a reminder about this fight that we're all in this together, because it's an attack on women. It's an attack on anyone that can get pregnant. You know, these bans that did happen that are, you know, going on right now, they're extremely harmful. There's no exception to their abortion unless it's directly threat to the child. Other than that, in case of rape or anything. So there's no exception for, you know, to have an abortion. So it's definitely an attack on women and women and anyone that can get pregnant.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's so tricky also, because the way these laws are worded and the way they're presented, it gets caught up in the details and caught up in, you know, when, in the case of Matt Shea and those folks here who want to confer rights upon embryos, getting caught in those details is kind of a clever legal strategy in some way, because it confuses the whole issue of, like, do people have bodily autonomy and, like, a right to privacy, mm-hmm. And a right to healthcare access, you know? So, Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm talking with Sarah Dixit and Fernanda Mascot from Planned Parenthood about the bans on abortion and kind of laws in progress around the country that are on a big uptick and what people are doing and can do to fight back against that. So, yeah. Do you want to talk about the graphic that you showed me on your phone?
Oh,
just
yeah.
To kind of give the roll call of what we are looking at right now?
Yeah. So in 2019, we've seen a huge uptick of bans on abortion, which can take a lot of different forms, between outright abortion bans or like fetal heartbeat detection and so on. There have been 16 cases of bills being passed, but the one that has received the biggest amount of outrage was the Alabama one, where they fully banned abortion unless there's a threat to the mother's life or to the fetus. But there's no exception for rape or incest or anything like that. And all of these bans and legislation, they know they're unconstitutional, right? So they're challenging Roe v. Wade, and they want it to get to the Supreme Court, which is why it's so scary for a lot of people. And you see, like, the ACLU recently posted, like, we'll see you in court, and recognizing that they're wasting taxpayer dollars, right, when they are knowingly going into these fights, knowing that it is unconstitutional. So I think the number was like $1.7 million or something with the last fight that happened with how many appeals and stuff they went through. So it's just like a waste of all this money that could be going towards, you know, education or the foster care system or things that would genuinely help, like, people in Alabama. So, yeah.
So how does it work then when the state's law is technically unconstitutional? I mean, how is that going to be enforced in the state? If I'm a 16-year-old in Alabama today who needs to go and access abortion,
it
do
is
you know?
Still legal, mm-hmm. and it's still safe to go. They don't become law until a certain point. I think the Alabama one said November of 2019, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But if there's legal stuff going, it won't go into effect. So an example of this is the recent Title 10 gag rule that happened. Title 9. No, Title 10.
Title 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's multiple fights of titles. But yeah, so it hasn't got, it went, didn't go into effect because so many people challenging it and challenging the Trump administration and seeing them in court. So there's a ruling in Oregon that ruled in our favor. Fernanda and I were both in Yakima recently for a court case, and we won that one as well. So it's really encouraging to see how we're fighting the Trump administration and winning. So yes, if you were a person in Alabama needing to receive that care, you could go do so.
Good. And how, I mean, what is, just strategically, I think that we have to, in cases like this, put a lot of faith in the courts and in the legal system, but obviously it's scary because of what our Supreme Court looks like. A lot of people are still justifiably reeling from the whole Kavanaugh debacle. What are the other alternatives? I mean, there's a lot of people who remember before Roe v. Wade. There's a lot of elders who remember what that was like. And there's a lot of imagery and talk about, you know, we don't want to go back to that time. But what might it look like strategically to, if we did, you know, worst case scenario, have to go back to that time without going back to the, you know, back alley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to realize to know that the majority of Americans do support safe and legal abortion. 73% of Americans don't want to see Roe overturn. So the majority of Americans do support abortion, which is why it's just, you know, it's a battle that we have to keep fighting.
Yeah, and you see it happen, like when it comes to like protections. So states can codify Roe v. Wade within their states. So Washington actually codified Roe v. Wade before it was Roe v. Wade. So it's 3 years before. So states can do that and just pass legislation that would make it accessible within their state. But the scary part would be there would be these pockets of states that wouldn't have that and it would be illegal. So what will happen if that were to happen, you'd have wealthier people still able to access that care. And then folks who aren't privileged in that way won't have that access, and it'll continue that cycle of poverty, which is what a lot of people don't understand, is that the wealthy will still be able to access this. And it is really heartbreaking to see that.
Mm-hmm. And these laws also have, like the way they're worded, it's, you know, the punishment is on the woman. So there's really no punishment for men. So, you know, for rape, incest, or, you know, anything, if the woman wants to access birth abortion, you know, the punishment is for the woman, but it's not for the man, even if the man takes part of, you know, conception. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of what I was seeing, at least initially, that people were so upset about, was the you know, the threat of charging a woman basically with criminal charges for violating this. But the thing I saw less about that actually is more explicit in the law is the penalty on doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So what, I don't know, what have we heard from doctors in the kind of Planned Parenthood network?
Oh, yeah. Doctors are outraged. Like, politicians should not be telling doctors how to do their job, especially when they've taken an oath to provide care to people and help them in any way they can. For a politician to tell them, well, now, because you did that, you are now going to face legal charges. Yeah. And when it came to different rallies we've done, like, the American Medical Association has come out against all of this stuff. The Obstetricians and Gynecologists National Organization also has. So all these big organizations of doctors have come out staunchly against this. And yet politicians are still passing these laws that are against science, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And what... I mean, as you said, you know, the wealthy are still going to have access. These same politicians, daughters, wives, mistresses, mm-hmm. et cetera, will have access ultimately. So what, and I just shared online a cross stitch that I found that says, this isn't about abortion, it's about control.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I guess I just wonder about either of your reaction to that. Why this struggle to control the bodies of, you know, people with uteruses, to
yeah.
control people's reproductive capacity?
Well, it's all intersectional, right? So, like, if you can't control your body and, say, you come from a family where you didn't have a lot of money and then you get pregnant when you're young and you can't have an abortion... Like, that delays you getting at your education. That delays you being able to go into the workforce full time if you have to take care of this child, because you also don't have good child care systems or parental leave or anything like that. So it just continues the cycle of poverty, and it doesn't allow for people to control what happens to them, especially when they don't have access to any of those things, right? There's no safety net. There's no, like... Well, if we're going to ban abortion, you also can't have comprehensive sex ed. You can't have access to birth control. It's like all these things stacked against people, which doesn't feel like they are truly wanting it to be a pro-life issue. Mm-hmm. It feels more like a controlling issue.
Yeah. I have a hard time with a lot of these lawmakers that, you know, they use... their religion to write up all these laws. And I struggle with that because, you know, you can have your own point of view, your own religion, but you don't have to necessarily, you know, put your religion on somebody else. So that's where I struggle with that because, you know, Christianity is not the only religion in this world. So what if you, you know, don't believe in that? What if you're an atheist, or what if you, you know, you just don't believe in the Bible? I mean, so why should they be making those laws and, you know, basing them on the Bible or on their Christian beliefs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's also Christians who are pro-choice, mm-hmm. who are probably in a minority in most communities, but they're supposed to be freedom of and from religion. Right. And how would those same lawmakers feel if the tables were turned and we became a majority, some other faith mm-hmm. nation? You know, they're the same people who are hysterical about Sharia law all the time, mm-hmm. but feel comfortable doing this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious about just locally, what does, I just know that the local, I guess it's regional Planned Parenthood affiliate is mm-hmm. just like full of amazing people mm-hmm. just because they've been near it for a long time. But, what does your support look like? Like, where do you get the most of your energy? Most like donors, activists, who is a local Planned Parenthood supporter, I guess.
We have a really, really good like coalition of partners that we team up. You know, we've been very grateful to have all these partners that always support us. They show up for our events. We do a lot of coalition events together, other than our, you know, our team, which is, you know, pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a really good support here in Spokane of all the progressive organizations here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we have a lot more support than people think we do in Eastern Washington. I think a lot of people assume if you're east of the Cascades, like, good luck, mm-hmm. when really we've seen the opposite. We've seen a lot of people like come out and say, like, we love you guys. Like, we want to see more of you. Like, how can we help? And I think that's been the coolest part of getting involved with this work, is seeing how our communities band together and are so willing to jump in and fight for the things that matter. So we've seen that across our affiliate, no matter how small our clinic might be in that area, people are willing to jump in and fight for what they think is right, which is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And what are some roles, I guess, if people listening want to kind of, if they're fired up these last couple of weeks, you shared an invitation to the rally, which, yeah, if you can repeat, I think it's tomorrow at 5.
It is.
Correct.
At, yes, the Tribal Gathering Place behind City Hall on Spokane Falls Boulevard. I'll share the link to the event on the Facebook page for the show, which is facebook.com/Praxis Radio, and also on Instagram, which is just @Praxis Radio. So I'll share those. But what are some other needs for volunteers if someone wants to do ongoing stuff?
Yeah, we have a ton of stuff people can do, and it's based on what people are passionate about. So some people are really passionate about being an escort in the parking lot and making sure patients know where to go and making sure that they feel comfortable coming into the clinic. So that's one. Other people can be an HCAP. So if you're doing HCAP, you're a health center advocacy program volunteer. So you sit in the clinic and you get patients to become supporters, because a lot of patients will come to receive care but not necessarily know that all of this is under attack. So it's empowering our patients to become part of the advocacy side, which has been really cool. We have a lot of tablings. We partner with a lot of community events in the summertime. So we have a bunch of prides going on. So if you love to have fun and march in parades, like, we'd love to have you. We're doing healthy neighborhood canvases this summer. So walking around neighborhoods in Spokane and talking to people about healthcare and how they can go access all these bills that we fought for. Because we've seen that, well, when things get passed, some people don't know that it has happened. So 2 years ago, we passed a bill for 12 months of birth control. So you can get 12 months supply in one visit. So just like telling people, like, you have access to this, like, this is super cool. So that's a lot of different ways to volunteer. And if there are ways you want to volunteer that aren't the things that we mention, like, come talk to us. We can totally find something that you'd like to do.
Yeah. I didn't know about the 12 months of birth control. That's huge.
It is.
So many people, if they're going to travel or anything like that, it's just this stressful process.
Exactly. So. And for folks who live in more rural communities or don't have access to transportation more readily, it allows them to get everything that they need in one visit, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Which, what an arbitrary thing. Again, control. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why was that not automatic?
I don't
know. You can do that with many other medications at the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then what, I know you said four local campuses, or you have four mm-hmm. campuses doing Generation Action.
Mm-hmm.
Which campuses are those?
Yeah. So the ones that I am managing are Whitworth, Eastern Washington University, WSU, so the Pullman location, and University of Idaho are the four that I have. We're working with a few Gonzaga students, so potentially, fingers crossed, about opening up a team over there. And then another organizer out in Yakima has a team on Central Washington University's campus, and another organizer in Walla Walla has one on Whitman's campus. So a lot of students getting involved, which is really exciting, because emboldening youth to take action has been like the coolest part of my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's even younger. Is there still?
Yeah.
Do you still have the teen advisory?
Yeah. So it's called Teen Council in Spokane. So they're a peer-led sex ed group. So they get to teach their fellow classmates about all these things that are really important and could be awkward for them. So just normalizing these conversations and making sure that they're empowered and know, like, if they're going to choose to have sex, like, how and how to be safe mm-hmm. and know what questions to ask and know how to have consent involved always and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember being in high school many years ago here, mm-hmm. and I had friends who were teen council members then, and they were kind of known as condom fairies, and
oh,
you knew that they had access to supplies and information in their backpack, and you could just stop them and have a conversation with them.
Right,
and it was great because that was not otherwise happening in class or mm-hmm. in the supposedly comprehensive sex ed that we had
right.
access to at the time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, thank you for all of that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis, talking with Sarah and Fernanda from Planned Parenthood, both organizers with Planned Parenthood in public affairs and with the RAIS program. If you've missed any part of the early part of the show and you want to catch the podcast, I'll put it up later tonight and you can find it by going to KYRS.org/show/praxis, PRAXIS, and that will all be posted later tonight. So I want to loop back a little bit to the beginning when we talked about how you both got involved. I'm really curious if there was either, no pressure to share that, but a personal experience or a story that really impacted you that made you kind of take the next step into getting involved in this work professionally.
You know, I did go, I've always shared this because I didn't realize that I went to a crisis pregnancy center until maybe 3 years ago. And this was, my son's 12, so this was like 12 years ago when I went to a crisis center. I was 20 and I was pregnant. I didn't have a doctor. So when I found out I was pregnant, I was at work because I took a pregnancy test there at work. And there was a crisis pregnancy. Well, they don't call them crisis. It's a clinic that says free pregnancy. So I went there, and I was brought in into a room, and because it just said free pregnancy test right outside. So I thought, cool, you know, they're gonna help me do a pregnancy test. So I went there, and they got me inside this room. They did the pregnancy test, but they didn't show me the pregnancy test. They told me that first I had to watch a few videos. So I watched maybe four videos. I was there for like an hour. I watched four videos, and those videos were about women who had an abortion and regretted it and you know, it was like they're having horrible dreams about, you know, babies. And so they were really graphic, sad, depressing videos. You know, I was 20. I was going to get married. And then my fiance had cold feet. So it had been maybe a month that we broke up the wedding when I found out I was pregnant. So I wasn't sure what to do. So it didn't even register to me that that was not okay, what they were doing. When the lady came in, you know, I asked her, why was I watching those videos? And she simply said, we just want to make sure that you know that abortion is not an option. But let's go over your ultrasound. So they showed me the ultrasound and I heard the heartbeat. And to be honest, at that point, I wasn't considering abortion. I honestly didn't even know what. I had no idea what my options were. So they didn't give me a copy of my ultrasound or my paperwork. But they did say they wanted me to come back on a monthly to have like therapy sessions with them. And they said if I was going to keep my child, they were going to have a basket full of diapers at the end of my pregnancy to come and talk to them. So when I told my sister about this, she was pretty mad. She was furious. So she took me to go see a real doctor. And, you know, he told me how long ago I was, and he gave me all my options. But yes, he was very upset about this clinic, what they were doing. Maybe 3 months afterwards, we went back, but the clinic wasn't there anymore. So we have learned that they do move around sometimes. So that always kind of got stuck in my head. I never really understood why that happened to me. Never really talked about it. I did carry on with my pregnancy. I had my son. But I really never understood why that situation happened until I started volunteering more with organizations like Planned Parenthood. Then it clicked to me and I thought, oh, I was in one of those crisis pregnancy centers. Mm. So, yeah, that's my story on that.
That's wild. And that's how well they blend in. I mean, you're not in, I imagine, you know, being in that position of being 20 and being like, oh, I'm pregnant. What am I going to do? You're not going to do an in-depth research project, and there's no Yelp for pregnancy centers, you know, to find out. You're going to see it on the sign and go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up in a very conservative household. My parents are Indian immigrants. We do not talk about anything sensitive topics like sex or anything like that. Similar to the Latinx community, it's just a very taboo thing to talk about. And also growing up in a very conservative church as well, and going to a religious school as well. So just always surrounded by that kind of stuff. So never really learning anything about even bodily anatomy, like none of that. I remember in middle school just learning about like my period with a little like pair with pipe cleaner fallopian tubes, and that's about my extent of sex ed. So just growing up and hearing about all the things that students would think and not really questioning how any of this happened, or no one really knowing anything about how to be safe, or any conversations like that. And just growing up and assuming that this is the way the world is and like abortion is wrong and all that kind of stuff. And then as I got older and reading more and challenging some of those fundamentalist ideals that I was taught, and going to college, being a sociology major and learning like, hey, this isn't what things are. And there's a lot of issues that contribute to why people need access to abortion. Like this is a race issue. This is poverty issue. This is socioeconomic issue. Like this is more than just someone receiving an abortion, right? So all of that just compounded upon itself, and I was total 180, and I was became super into the, you know, liberal person that I am today, and just realized that sometimes people just need to have those things that they learned for so long just challenged for the first time, and just have a conversation with someone who has that same upbringing as you. So I just became really passionate and love having conversations with people about it. And like you said earlier, how there are pro-choice people who are Christian, like I identify that way. So being able to talk to people and not think those are two contradictory things and thinking they actually go pretty hand in hand. So it's been a really cool experience and something I've grown to be extremely passionate about.
Mm-hmm. And one resource, I guess, that I would point people to that's been a really cool movement to watch over the last, I don't know when they kicked off, probably 5 years max, is Shout Your Abortion. Mm-hmm. They've done really cool storytelling work. I'd love to talk to some of the people who have been in the book and the events in different places. Basically, it's a more inclusive version of the videos they made you watch at the center of just people saying, like, yes, I had an abortion. Here's what happened. And it's a wide variety. It's people from all walks of life. It's people from all, like, parts of the gender spectrum and age and wealth and race and everything, just saying, like, hey, this is normal. Here's why I did it. Here's what I do with my life now. So if folks are curious and want to hear some stories without asking people in your lives potentially really invasive questions, there's folks who have volunteered to share that out in the world. So I'll share that link too. Yeah,
that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else was I going to ask you about that? It's what you were saying about a 180. Mm-hmm. Things are so polarized right now, politically. And I feel like this is a topic that has always been polarizing for folks. And we talked a little bit about some of the arguments around, like, when does life begin? These other questions about people's privacy, health-wise. I guess what's your advice for people, as folks who, at least as part of your job, you know, professionally talk to people about abortion and birth control? What are some tactics for engaging with people who truly believe that, you know, abortion is murder or a stance like that? What's your engagement strategy there?
Yeah, when it comes to people who are staunchly, like, yelling at us outside the clinic, we have a non-engagement policy. So we know it's not necessarily safe to have those conversations. So for everyone's like working or volunteering with Planned Parenthood, we just don't engage. But for folks who we are having conversations with, it's a lot of just recognizing that this is a holistic issue. And even if someone is against abortion 100%, there are other things they can do to help and not necessarily just stack the deck against someone, but advocating for sex education or advocating for access to contraception and things like that, and building that groundwork. Because, I mean, no one like wakes up in the morning being like, I can't wait to have an abortion one day. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that someone has on their bucket list. Mm-hmm. So if there's things we can do to help people who don't want to get pregnant at a certain time not do that, then, like, we should be all for that and helping with all these things that can genuinely help that.
Yeah. And, you know, for example, I have family members that are not pro-choice. They call themselves pro-life, but they are at the same time respectful and supportive of the work that I do. And, you know, it took time for me to really educate them, you know, but I, you know, make sure I let them know that, you know, I am pro-choice so that they can be pro-life. You know, that's how you need to see it. I can't have you abandon your own views and your own religious views, but just to recognize that that is what it is. It's your own personal views, your own religious views. And you cannot be implementing that on somebody else. You wouldn't want someone else to be implementing their own views or their own religion onto your lifestyle. So that's just how I have been able to manage it with my family, because I grew up in a Catholic household. And then that's how we, you know, we talk about it. But most of my family are Catholics pro-choice, so they, you know, have to believe that abortion is wrong, and they themselves don't think that they could ever have an abortion, but they 100% believe that it is a personal choice that they could not make for someone else.
Mm-hmm. So all they can do is just not have one personally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I guess just backing up again, what is, before we wrap up, we've got like 3 or 4 minutes. What is the status of that bill in Washington? I know it doesn't have much of a chance, but we shouldn't.
Yeah. So since the legislative session's over, I don't think it even.
Oh, okay.
It. Yeah.
But it was just proposed. Okay.
It was. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if those legislators who proposed it do not return to serve further terms, mm-hmm. is that kind of a main strategy? Is that back end electoral work to make sure to elect people in the first place who?
Yeah. Who support the work that we're doing and support progressive legislative issues and making sure that we are vigilant. Because even if just one election cycle gets away from us, like that has ramifications on people's lives. So making sure people are engaged locally in like local politics, like in the fall, we'll have our local elections here in Spokane. And then next year being 2020. So making sure people are engaged throughout the political cycle and not just when 4 years roll around.
Yeah. And really, you know, people should really understand, you know, what their elected officials believe, what is their agenda, really get informed, you know, and vote, because a lot of them, they don't really know, or one, they don't vote because they're not really sure what their agenda is, or they don't really investigate what the agenda is or what they're running on. And I mean, that is like very important. That's like a life changing that can happen in one vote. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for people who maybe don't feel like they'll be directly affected because they may not be in possession of a uterus, mm-hmm. should care to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's my small plug. So I guess just in our last moments here, can you just share a rundown of any links that people can go to if they want to get involved locally, the details for the rally again, any resources you think folks should check out?
Yeah, we can send you some links. We have a online petition that you can sign showing that you don't support the bans that are going forth, and sign in support of, you know, people having that right to access abortion, because it is their constitutional right. And then for the rally tomorrow, it's 5 p.m. at the Spokane Tribal Gathering Center, so right outside of City Hall. We will be there. There will be speakers. It should be a good time. And then also encouraging folks to share their own stories. It can be really scary. We understand. If that's something you want to talk about first before you start sharing or anything like that, we're always available. We can give Taylor our emails. That can be on the site as well. And potentially writing letters to the editor, op-eds, basically things to show that this is an issue that impacts Spokane in our community and get people to care.
Yeah. And we can, like Sarah said, give our emails, because sometimes, you know, we do this a lot. So we're thinking it's easy. We're like, yeah, do this, do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some folks don't know how to write an op-ed, don't know what an op-ed is, how to write it. So, I mean, they can always outreach to us, and we can kind of help them, you know, navigate.
Awesome. Well, I'll put everything you send me and your emails in the podcast notes on the podcast when that goes up. That will be up at kyrs.org/show/praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S. You can also go directly to soundcloud.com/praxisradio, P-R-A-X-I-S-R-A-D-I-O, or you can email me at praxis@kyrs.org. So thanks so much to both of you for making time today and for all the work you do. I'll see you at the rally tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll be posting stuff there on social media for the show and all the rest. So
yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Keep it up.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. You're listening to KYRS Thin Air Community Radio, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. I'll be back next week with a brand new show.